Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Just the Sip. Today, I am pulling from the archives. I feel like there are important conversations we had on this show years ago that I need to revisit because we are dealing and tackling with some of these issues right now. And I'm actually pulling the first interview I ever did for Just the Sip. The first person I ever sat down with, we discussed self-discovery, sexuality, sobriety, and the conversation got a little steamy. So please welcome from Younger, Nico Tortorella.
How professional do I have to be during this interview?
What does that even mean, professional? Like, what can you not do?
Like, I'm just trying to figure out the boundaries because I'm blushing right now.
I can't tell.
Because I have a big crush. You're one of my favorite celebrities.
Oh, thanks.
I love how open and honest you've been this whole time, which is such a change from Hollywood.
Yeah. We're not taught to be that way, you know?
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
But I want to know, you grew up in Illinois.
I did.
What was that like?
Chicago was great to grow up in. I grew up like 20 minutes north of the city. And I started working in the city in Chicago as an actor on stage from a pretty young age at like 13. I booked my first show, my first like real show in the city. And I was in a show for 3 years on and off. It was a show about a Catholic family in the 50s. And there were three brothers in the show. And I started off as an understudy for the youngest brother. Then I became the youngest brother. Then I played the middle brother. And then I closed playing the oldest brother.
Wow.
So I like grew up in this show. We did 8 shows a week. I missed school every Wednesday for matinees.
So you're like a real actor.
I mean, if like growing up on stage means you're a real actor, then yes, I'm absolutely a real actor.
Well, you know, like people come here and they say, oh, I want to be an actor, yeah. You know, and they get an agent and they get headshots and it's all about the fame. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants the fame. But this is something that you've done since you were 13 years old.
Yeah. And it was definitely about the fame. When I moved to LA, I went to school for a year in Chicago at Columbia, just like doing gen ed and like art stuff, because I like decided my senior year of high school that I was not going to act anymore, which did not last for very long. But I was getting involved in visual art, painting, a lot of mixed media stuff. And so I was going to art school in Chicago, and then I transferred to Loyola Marymount here in LA. I always knew in the back of my head that I was going to wind up in LA one way or another, and this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. But it was always a means for a bigger message.
Yeah,
it was to get the celebrity,
yeah,
to use it for something much bigger than the celebrity.
That makes much more sense, because when you said it was for the fame, I'm like, oh, this bitch is coming out the gate.
I'm
honest.
Coming, yes, for sure. But it was, because with fame comes a responsibility, and I was always more interested in the responsibility than I was in just being a movie star. And I think the more work. We're just jumping all over the place here.
Oh, no, I like it.
The more work that I have been doing on myself, the less, like, playing make-believe and being a movie star is of importance.
But
transition?
No, look, let me get there. Let me get there, because I'm like, okay, we're going to jump. We're going to jump right into it. When you come to Hollywood, people tell you this is the public persona you're going to have, and you're going to stick with it, and this is how we're going to book you, and da-da-da-da. you've kind of sort of kicked that door down and decided to be who you are and be open about it. Did you get pushback from Hollywood at all? Agents, managers, or publicists?
I don't want to say pushback, but there were plenty of long conversations that were had on who I was and how people were going to perceive me. And I still have those conversations, especially when it comes to gender identity and the more recent conversations that I've been having about non-binary and gender non-conforming issues. But I think that the industry has changed so much, even since I started, even in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That was 6 months with Me Too. The industry has drastically changed.
100%.
And, you know, I mean, I started in this industry when social media didn't exist at all. And then,
don't you miss those days, though?
I don't know if I do.
When you can do that when no you one would know. Do,
but I can still do nobody knows for sure.
Can you?
Hey, we're going to zoom in on that. But yeah, no, I, you know, people think that we know everything about everybody through social media, but we have to remember we're only getting the piece that they want to show us.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of room for private life. But going back to that conversation about social media not existing, like when Instagram popped and when we all started like sharing on Instagram,
yeah,
that's when the conversation in my life really came to the forefront with my agents and managers being like, okay, girl, put your shirt back on. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? Like, no. Like, everybody is doing this. And like, people are getting to know me rather than like Trevor from Scream 4 or Jacob from The Following. Like, I've always put myself first, not the characters that I've played. And we're all these like multi-dimensional dynamic humans. And I think that that is really what has been allotted to us through social media. And I think that what is happening right now in this revolution of the internet is we're finding each other.
Yeah.
In a way that's never been possible since the beginning of time.
But speaking of finding yourself, because I feel like I'm still trying to figure out what it means to be gay. And what it means to be gay on TV, and what it means to be black and gay, because it's this whole thing. Right. You've gone through this whole journey of self-discovery, and you've not hidden one thing from anyone. Mm. You've done it pretty openly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How has that impacted your career?
Well, it started right here in a podcast. It started with the Love Bomb. I got sober from alcohol 3.5 years ago. I started having these conversations really seriously in my life. It was like, I don't want to say it was like one addiction to the next, but you know, from alcohol, I like moved on to these conversations about sexuality and gender. And it was just like, I became obsessed with trying to pick it apart and figure out why we're here having these conversations. And through the podcast, I mean, I just decided if I was having these conversations in my own waking life, why not share?
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And the second that those were released into the ether, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even begin to explain how much my life changed.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what the question was that you asked me.
No, I am so like, I'm dripping on every word right here. You mentioned being sober for 3.5 years. Yeah. What was that journey like for you to get sober? Like, what were you...
From alcohol, specifically. I still smoke weed every now and then. I love a psychoactive. But alcohol was my issue.
For how long?
I mean, probably like 20.
And you're 20, how old now?
I'm turning 30 in a couple weeks.
So 20 to 27, you're this Hollywood actor. You're doing Scream 4, The Following, Younger, Make It or Break
Beautiful
It.
Beautiful Life, yeah.
You're doing all these things. Mm-hmm. In Hollywood, you're an actor. You're going to events. You're going to all these parties. You're giving everything.
Alcohol, cocaine, everything is just thrown at you for free. Like, nobody ever talks about that. And I think that, like, also, it's, I mean, I brought up the Me Too movement. That's also a part of the conversation that's never really talked about in that space.
No, like, one's connected it.
No one's connected the absurdity of the usage of drugs and alcohol in this industry and the connection to, you know, sexual misconduct. Like, those are intrinsically linked, for sure, but nobody's having that conversation.
Well, now that we're having this conversation, in the 7 years that you felt that you were kind of in your addiction, did you ever experience something?
No, I didn't really. I think I put myself in some situations that I think, like, if I wasn't drunk, I wouldn't necessarily have been in, but I don't think I was ever taken advantage of or ever took advantage of anyone. I mean, luckily, when I would get blacked out drunk, I would go to sleep. I would just go to sleep. Nothing bad would happen.
You were smart.
Yes, exactly. Thank God. But I don't know. I just bring that up because, like, it frustrates me that that's never really part of the conversation.
No, I agree with that. What was the scariest part in your addiction?
Just what I was doing to myself, like how I was hurting myself. I mean, there were a couple like benders that were really bad, and I would just, I mean, thankfully, thank God, I never hurt anybody else and I never jeopardized my work. Like, nobody ever really knew what was happening. I, like, towards the end when it was getting bad, like, I was by myself. Yeah. I was by myself locked in an apartment in New York City for days.
But you say bad, like, what do you mean bad? Like, how much were you drinking?
Oh, I was just drunk for days on end. And, like, doing drugs.
And people knew.
I mean, the people in my life that were closest to me, like, Bethany knew, and a few of our friends knew, and, like, a few of my family members knew. I was just a wreck. I was in a lot of pain. I was, like, really, really hurting. And I think looking back in hindsight, it had a lot to do with my sexuality and my gender and, like, not being able to really, like, live to my fullest. As who I was and who I loved or had the potential of loving. And I think for so long I was like numbing the pain before I really knew how to heal.
Yeah.
And in these last 3.5 years, like, I have really started to wrap my head around the healing process.
You find that once you became honest with yourself, mm-hmm. that you could let go of that demon.
It's not even just honest with yourself, it's honest with other people, you know?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the only way you can be honest with other people is by being honest with yourself. But I think, like, both of those will always and forever be a work in progress. It's not about landing on a destination. These conversations for me, and they are and can be and will be for other people always, about, like, landing on a destination, that's never been the end result, because that means there's an end result. And I think that in my life, I'm not looking for any sort of end result. It's always this, like,
endless growth,
physical manifestation of process and journey.
Another thing that you were so open about was you had body dysmorphia.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. It's not that I had. I think, yeah, I do.
And I'm wondering, because I you know, you have... Again, Hollywood is such a high-pressure place to look the best, to be the best, to be on your game. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that, and how do you really nourish your body and your mind and not get caught up in that Hollywood game that feeds into that body dysmorphia? Well,
you just stop playing it. You stop playing somebody else's game, and you start playing your own game. And that's really what I've been doing in the last, like, couple years, really. I mean, and most intensely with the book. And the work that I've been doing post-book, All of It Is You. I'm f***ing not playing anyone else's game anymore.
You're
like,
done.
It's not that I'm done. I've just created my own game. And, like, when you're playing your own game, like, nobody else's game matters.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I mean when I say, like, it, being a movie star, playing into... It's not at the top of my totem these days, because, like, my dreams and what I want and these babies that I'm birthing with my own artwork are so much more fulfilling than any other person's project that I've ever done.
What's at the top of your totem pole? Tell me what's at the top.
What's at my top? God's at the top, you know?
Yeah.
That is the driving force. I think if God is one, two is philanthropy. And, like, actually being, representing the positive change that you want to see in the world.
And three is marrying Justin
and
Sylvester.
Three is marrying Justin.
But speaking of your marriage, let me break this down for
that
you guys.
That was a
who
transition.
Let me tell you. Because I got a lot to talk about this. I am so interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to come one of your sister wives at this
yes.
point.
Yes.
You and Bethany have been together. She gon' can you get that headshot ready? Because I'm about to give myself. I'm about to. You have been with your primary partner Bethany for 12 years. Mm-hmm. You guys recently got married, and you were in a polyamorous relationship.
we say 12 years. There were a good, there have been a few like good chunks of years where we both were in very serious committed relationships with other people, but we have never stopped talking to each other.
So you were always tethered to one another.
Always, in one way or another, yeah.
Now, in a polyamorous relationship, just explain to me what it is. In your own experience.
The ability to hold space for more than one person at a time.
Okay. The amount of jealousy I would feel, I don't think with another woman, but I think if you were with another man, that would get to me. So what's the guidelines? Like, how do you even have that first conversation?
Well, what is the first conversation?
Like, we're going to be in a polyamorous relationship.
Oh, well, we didn't ever, like, get into this knowing that this is what we were going to be doing. I mean, are you saying, like, how would I tell somebody else to have that first conversation? Or how did I have that first conversation?
How did you have that first conversation with your wife?
Well, yeah, we never really did, right? It just kind of, and I, like, this word is so cliche, but it happened so organically. We met 12 years ago. I was a kid. I mean, I was 18 years old. She was 20. And we have been every iteration of a relationship in these 12 years. We have both, like, grown into our own queerness in these 12 years. And I think polyamory is, like, part of the queer family in one way or another, whether it's a straight polyamorous relationship or not. And I think ultimately we have been dating other people for the last, like, 10 years, right? At one point, we were just like, oh, this is a polyamorous relationship. Like, yes, we're dating other people, but we are still here as the primary relationship. And I think it took, like, some trial and error, really. I think that we have dated some people that didn't really understand how Bethany and I were still so close.
Yeah.
Bethany and I didn't really understand what it meant. And the second, like, from the podcast, from having this conversation publicly, like, we expanded our own education on the community as a whole and gender identity, and it just kind of, like, jumped at us.
Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let me give a hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say you and I meet.
Yes.
We hit it off.
Yes.
There's sparks.
Yeah, you see the ring on my finger.
I see the ring on your finger. How do you explain that to me?
Yeah.
Like, how do you walk me? Because I find that in the last few years, I think it's because of living in Los Angeles, because, you know, opening my own thoughts and own minds because of people like you who are so open. I'm down to, like, experiment with some I just know myself.
Right.
But how would you explain it to me?
But you also know a version of yourself, right? And, like, I think this idea of ourselves being fixed is really problematic. And I think that that is where I have fallen in love with the word fluidity. It's so much more than our gender identities or our sexualities. It's the ability to shape shift. And I think there is always room for human beings to shapeshift and to grow. We're not ever going to be one thing for the rest of our lives. It's just, if you want to say that, I believe in you, like, good luck. But I just don't, like, I don't believe in it for myself. You know, so we haven't really been dating anybody since we've gotten married. But now we are like, okay, we're getting the itch. We're like, enough is enough. It's time to hit the streets. So I have started dating a little bit or starting the conversation. And it's a different conversation now that we're married. And I think that it's easier in a lot of ways and also more difficult. I think the union that we've created for ourselves is, yes, very much so a civil union recognized by the state. But it is this, like, deeply spiritual union that I don't think that I've realized was going to affect me as much when I decided to get married as it has now. But I think that the bond itself, the label of husband, wife, even though I think that those feed into the binary, which is a little bit problematic, spouse and spouse,
yes,
is a little bit easier to comprehend as a primary relationship, being in a polyamorous relationship, yes, moving forward for our secondary, tertiary, whatever relationships that we're bringing in. So, yes.
You find it easier when you date outside of that primary for it to be another man.
Oh, no. Well, first of all, I don't really believe in gender. So that's a whole other conversation.
I'm like, I am like literally, keep on going. Preach it to me because I am trying to wrap my head around this whole thing.
So what I say, okay, so we meet, okay? I would say, hey, look, I'm married to my best friend. And navigating any sort of relationship outside of my marriage is going to be difficult. But it is going to be filled with honest, loving, nurturing communication and respect.
I would say as a Scorpio and knowing myself, how much say does she have in our relationship? Like,
well, it depends.
Am I getting the same amount of time as she is?
Is that what matters to you? Do you want the time split?
I want to feel like the main bitch, even though I know I'm not the main bitch.
Okay, well, you're never going to feel like the main bitch because there is a main bitch. But, like, you could be, like, another main bitch in a different way. I've known you now for a couple days. I've known her for 12 years.
Fair enough.
You know? So Bethany and I navigate our relationships outside of our marriage a little bit differently. I am like super, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm super monogamous when it comes to my relationships outside of Bethany.
Which is what I want.
Yeah, okay. Which is what you want. Yeah, yeah. So if I'm dating you, I'm dating you. And Bethany is still my best friend, my forever partner, but I'm dating you. And then, obviously, the conversation about sex comes into play. Like, are you still sleeping with them?
Yes.
And how does that change our sexual relationship? And it's been different over the years. Sometimes I have been dating somebody, and Bethany and I were still having sex. But Bethany and I went 2 years without ever sleeping together once. And I think it just depends on also who Bethany is with at the time.
If she's being fulfilled.
If she's being... But the sex that Bethany and I have is different than the new sex that I'm having. Because we've been having sex for 12 years. There's...
It's a much more intimate, metaphysical connection.
Yes.
And what we would do would be nasty.
It'd
be nasty.
This would probably be nasty, yes. But, like, I've had that super metaphysical, physical relationship with somebody immediately. Like, you just never know when you're going to meet someone and it's just like you're in the stars already.
Yeah.
But, so, navigating that conversation of, are you still sleeping with Bethany while we're still sleeping together? The answer is, I don't know yet. We haven't slept together yet. You know? And like, only time will tell. But then the conversation of children comes into play.
Yes.
Bethany and I are planning on having children.
Which is perfect for me because I always wanted stepchildren.
Great!
But, great. Okay, so in a polyamorous relationship, do we ever mix the two families?
Are you talking about like hanging out, having dinner, or are you talking about having sex?
No. I would never. I don't want to bump uglies with Bethany. I'm just saying like...
Yeah,
it's when she comes around, like, is that hard for people to get used to?
It's really important for me, for whoever I'm dating, to be comfortable with Bethany. So, like, I'm starting talking to this person right now. We, like, have moved from it being, like, a social media conversation.
Okay, so this interview is done because he is now with someone else and I am out of here. No, I'm just joking.
No, but it's still very, very early stages. There's still room here. It has moved from, like, a social media relationship, just talking online, to, like, moving from text messages, and then the FaceTime start, right? And then, like, we don't live in the same city right now. We have been on a couple dates. But, like, the FaceTimes happen, and I live with Bethany now. I have an apartment in the city that we share, and then we have a house upstate. So we're not together all the time. But if, like, girl, you're FaceTiming me on a regular basis, like, Bethany is going to be in the room. And, like, you need to be comfortable with saying, like, hey, what's up, girl?
Yeah.
Like, how are you?
Right.
And the first time that, like, the two of these people had a conversation, it was great. It was like, oh, hey, how are you? Like,
yeah.
that burger looks delicious.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Can't wait to meet you.
I wouldn't mind. You see, now that you're breaking this down to me, I feel like I wouldn't mind that. I feel like I would only mind it if in our polyamorous situation, if you'd break off and meet someone else, and that person was a guy,
I don't have time.
And I would be like, come on, like what, like what's going on?
So why is the guy thing an issue? You want to be the only man in my life.
I'm a jealous motherfucker, and I want to be the only guy in your life. I don't think I would have a problem with the girl, which is surprising to me because I'm a Scorpio. Mm. I want everything to myself.
Yeah. In my recent work that I've been doing on gender identity, I have really started to break down this construct of male and female and like recognizing the infinite space between. And I'm in a really interesting place right now because if I don't necessarily believe that gender is a real thing, then what is sexuality?
Yeah.
Then what, like, what is it? What is the difference between being attracted to you and being attracted to the person that was born with a vagina between their legs?
Yeah.
And I think that is actually even something that I've been not struggling with, but going through as somebody who is white, as somebody who is straight passing, as somebody who is cis passing, like, and like conventionally, I know, like very attractive, yeah, right? Like my body is fetishized in a way that like I'm trying to move past.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like move past the human connection as body to body.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that part of the conversation makes sense without.
No, I'm getting where you're going, and it's giving me so much thought. Is this all in your book?
This book that I wrote, All of It Is You, really celebrates this oneness, this divine frequency of love that unites all of us. I found like my own God in this book.
Yeah.
Okay.
This man is deep, yo. This man is deep right here.
And I think that without you, this is the idea for the book, without you, nothing exists. Okay. So it's about recognizing the simultaneity in everyone and everything that exists. Mm-hmm. And for me, like the closest that I've gotten to God is from a place of like release, of like completely letting go.
Yeah.
And recognizing the unknowability that exists in everything, that like broken pureness is actually what unites us all.
Yeah.
Did that make any sense?
No, it made sense. It made sense. The broken pureness is where I caught. I was like, done. Mm. I get it. What's the response been from this book?
Interesting. Really positive. The shows that I'm doing where I like actually get to spread the word in one way or another to these people that want to come and listen has been the most rewarding work I've ever done in my entire life. I have these, not kids because they're not kids, but like these people that come to my shows and all they want to do is like share their lives with me,
yeah,
and let them know how much this book and the work that I'm doing and the messages that I have changed their life and saved their lives. And I don't know. I feel like I'm just stepping into something that's so much more than I even realize what is happening.
You're so open with the world, mm-hmm, and everyone embraces it. And
not everyone.
No, people embrace it. I feel like the mass audience and the people who matter embrace it. What does your family think about your openness and the journey that you have been on?
My family came to my show this week in Chicago, and I'm not going to say that it was easy. It was difficult. I don't think they've ever seen me, or I know they haven't seen me like in this new light that I have created for myself. And you know, this poetry, like poetry isn't for everyone. I understand that.
Yeah.
I know that there is a performative artistry to what I am doing that like, I think it's hard for my family to separate the Nico that they know from what they saw on stage the other night.
Yeah.
For the most part, I would say they have been really positive on in regards to like the messaging that I have right now of sexuality and gender. There are some super Republican conservative folk in my family that just don't understand what the f- I'm talking about half the time.
And, same here.
And that's okay. Like it's intention.
But do you take blame for it? Because let me tell you this. I had to start to take blame for my mother and my family not being as supportive as I thought they should be. But I also realized that I haven't exposed them and I've hidden parts of my life from them. Mm-hmm. So I had to almost take blame for it. Have you had to do that within yourself lately?
I don't know if it's taking blame, but I think...
Responsibility. Responsibility,
yeah. I mean, I think that that, in essence, is the idea of the book. All of it is you, all of it is me. That, like, this inherent homophobia or racism or transphobia that exists somewhere in my family is, in part, a piece of me. And it's not taking blame for that, but it's taking responsibility that this is where I have come from, and because I came from this place, I am able to speak the way that I am right now. And so it goes past blame, it goes past responsibility, and it lands in a space of gratitude, which is like the most incredible space to live when it comes to family. Because when I can look in my uncle's eyes and say, thank you for putting me through all of that, because it brought me to where I am today, and I love you.
Can y'all get that wedding ring now? We're about to add a third to this mother. I'm about to lock it down. It's funny because your character on this season of Younger is kind of going through these, like, this emotional journey and accepting things and figuring things out. Are you bringing your personal life into this character? Are they writing it for you at this point?
I think in one way or another that happens on any television show that lasts more than a couple seasons. The writers get to know the actors, and they start writing for, you know, the players of the game. And Josh has always been close to my heart in terms of, like, how he expresses love. You know, playing Josh on this show has really been one of the greatest privileges of my life.
Yeah.
People know me in one way or another as Josh, as this very white, very straight, very cis-passing dude. And so when I leave that show and I start having this conversation, it makes it so much more digestible because they're like, oh, that guy, Josh, is allowed to talk like this.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, that's been my, like, the most rewarding part of being on this show is, like, it makes everything that I'm doing outside of it that much easier.
When you look at yourself in 10 years... When it comes to family, where do you see yourself? Own personal family and your polyamorous, bougie-ass house in upstate New York. Like, how do you
imagine? I live in the middle of a forest in the middle of nowhere. I think that we have a few kids, three, that are raised without gender. That we let them make every decision that they want to make as long as it's not hurting themselves or anybody else. We don't push anything on them. And in terms of my own and our relationships, I think that they will be ever evolving. I think that Bethany and I we get closer every single day that we spend together. So 10 years from now, you know, we're that much closer. Yeah. And I think that there will probably be two other people that are more... like staples in our relationship. And maybe one of those two other people maybe has other children of their own. And I think that we are traveling a bunch as a community and really spreading love as the message.
And our first date is when?
Is right. We just had it.
Did we? Yeah. Was it a good one?
It was good. I mean, we read poetry to each other.
This is the weirdest first date I've ever had.
It's so beautiful.
But thank you so much.
Like, every interaction you ever have, or I ever have with anybody, should always feel like a first date.
People listen to you, and I'm not just telling you that to toot your horn or like to touch your ass. Like, you make a difference.
We're just getting started. There's so much work to do.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you. You too.
For breaking the mold. You guys, thanks for listening, and do not forget to subscribe. And be sure to come back every week for another pour of your favorite celebrity.